I was planning for this call, and an analogy that occurred to me was in 1986, just over 30 years ago, goods and services tax was introduced into New Zealand, and it was a pretty major change at the time, but 30 years later, it's pretty much unremarked upon. It's just part of business as usual. And I think that's a handy analogy for what we're going through at the moment with some of the changes around health and safety, certainly in farming, even though the scale and consequences are obviously quite different. I know, you know, GST was introduced to address some perceived problems, but at the same time, it offered a bunch of opportunities. Our economic service team, for example, have commented that they saw a marked lift in the effectiveness of farm budgets when GST was required every couple of months, compared to often they would turn up and there would be a cardboard box with 12 months worth of invoices and receipts in it to work through. So, and as many of you will know, and I think a number of you who are listening tonight will have attended, Beef and Lamb New Zealand has run a large number of farm safety management system workshops over the past year to help farmers implement the changes required. And I think if you've been to a workshop, they stress trying to achieve the benefits out of the situation and the new policies and regulations as well. It's not just about compliance. So again, a plug for those workshops. We're still running them. They're still free and they have had great feedback. So if you haven't been to one, there's bound to be one coming up in your neighbourhood in the next few months. So have a look on our website, check the call the 0800 number or contact your local extension manager. Anyway, this conference call is designed to complement those workshops. It's a chance to talk about why some of those changes have come about, what they mean for farmers and farm businesses, and how the process can be about strengths and opportunities on farm as well, not just necessarily threats and weaknesses. And in the process, we'll answer a few questions, hopefully, and that's why we're keen on you to send them in. So to talk us through that, I'm joined tonight by Al McCone, who's Sector Lead for Agriculture at WorkSafe New Zealand. So welcome along, Al. In a moment, you're going to go over the usual starting spiel with some of your prepared remarks before we get into the questions, but always start with a bit of background. Can you explain a bit more? What's your role at WorkSafe and how did you come to be there?
Well, I'm the thanks very much, Aaron, for inviting me along, first of all, I should say that, and thanks to everyone out there who's tuned in for the invitation to join you tonight too. I came to WorkSafe on invitation. I'd been working at LandCorp and in the HR field, and a lot of the work that I was doing was around health and safety. And WorkSafe saw that and were looking for someone to come into WorkSafe to look after the agricultural program and approach me, and the rest is history, really. So I'm the sector lead for agriculture for WorkSafe. My job is to get out there and make sure that the agricultural sector as a whole, which is pastoral farmers, horticulture, viticulture, all the other bits and pieces, you know, the contractors, everything along those lines, all those bits are the things that we look after and try to communicate the necessity to have good health and safety practice.
So it's a fairly challenging role with all the things that have gone on in the past.
It has been.
Are going on, yeah.
Actually, it has been, but to tell the truth, and I'll say a little bit more about this, I've found the last year really quite gratifying that a lot of farmers are starting to come up and say, we get it. Mm. And that's been really, really a good thing to hear.
Good. All right. Well, hopefully, I mean, the aim of tonight is to help more people get it. But at the same time, there's going to be some things people want to make clear to you or raise with you and get your thoughts on it. And no doubt you've had those face to face. So look, how about we hook into it then? You got a few prepared remarks, the things you really want to stress, and then we'll expand on them a bit as we get into the questions and answers.
Yeah, sure. So one of the things I'd like to say is this week sees the first anniversary of the Health and Safety at Work Act. And I thought it was probably a lot of people out there, it doesn't really enthuse them. You know, it's just the anniversary of another set of compliance that they have to put up with. But over the last 2 years, we've seen a number of steps taken forward in the ag sector. And that's what's gratifying. And I'd like to put my thanks to Beef and Lamb, especially around the workshops, but also Dairy NZ, Hort NZ, New Zealand Wine, Federated Farmers. They've started to take up a gap that there's been in the sector of leading the charge on health and safety on farms. And that's been really, really good for us to see, because we shouldn't be leading it. That's not our role. as WorkSafe. Our role is to regulate and to ensure that people understand the legislation. So having the sector stand up and starting to lead health and safety itself is a really great thing. I think a lot of people see health and safety as compliance with the legal requirements, but what we're seeing is more and more people getting that that's just the bottom of the room, that's the floor, that's where you have to be. And more people are saying, actually, we can do a lot better than that. We can raise the bar, and they're aiming for the ceiling instead. And what they're saying, and I run into a lot of people at field days who say this, once they start, they actually start seeing the utility of it and protecting themselves, protecting their family, protecting their workers, and protecting their investment in their business. And they get it, and that's really the thing that we're looking for, is people to see this is all about an investment in your business. It's another way of doing business. Where New Zealand's lucky is our legislation is not really prescriptive. So it gives each business the chance to tailor the health and safety to their own business and to manage the workplace risks in a way which best sits with their business. Now, a lot of people, and a lot of people in agriculture especially, it seems, like really hard and fast rules, and that less prescriptive way of doing things doesn't really suit them. But my point is to those people that having prescriptive rules would mean that they would have to go and learn every one of those rules. And every time those rules change, there'd be new learning to do, and they'd have to be on top of it all the time. And their lawyers would have to be on top of it, and their accountants would have to be on top of it. And the constant rewriting of rules would mean you'd find it really hard to keep up, and you'd have to employ thousands more public servants to make sure it was all out there. And we just don't want to go there. So this way, with the new Act, and to a certain extent with the old Act as well, all you really need to know is just a few basic principles and apply them to your work, to your equipment, to the environment you work in, and to the people that are in your business. And those of you who have done the beef and lamb workshops, who have attended the follow-on stuff that Agri Women's Development Trust does, you'll know that this isn't hard. It's not really hard stuff to do. We keep on saying it's just around three things, and that's thinking about what's being done in your workplace and what risks that it poses to people, then working out how you can eliminate those risks, or if you can't reasonably, practically eliminate them, then how you can manage the risks as far as possible, and then communicating with everyone involved to make sure they understand the risks that will impact on them and how that's going to be managed. And that's it, in a nutshell. That's what you have to do. And that's what the law basically says. And I think the other thing that struck me this year has been the number of other people who come onto farms who want their workplace to be safe too. So if you've got a vet coming to look at your cattle, they want yards that don't poke nails or boards into their legs. They want beasts that aren't racked up because they've been put in at the last minute. Truckies want loading ramps that flow well and allow them safe places to work. Fert spreaders want to know detail about where they're going and what condition the ground is in. Top dressers want to know about wire hazards and they want to be able to see them. Wood gangs want to know the roads are safe and other traffic isn't going to slam into them. And you want to make sure what they do doesn't hurt you too. So the real essence here is good communication, and it's going to become more and more key. And an on-the-mark conversation between the two of you, or some good pre-prepared questions that they've got for you or you've got for them, is a million times better than any form that some office-bound Wally has got for you to give them to sign and tick off. Because what you're doing is you're having a conversation about the actual risks, not about what might have been somewhere. And one last point, and it's I hope I don't upset anyone too much here, late last year, I spent going through a whole lot of reports of incidents of on farms that had caused fatalities. And the one thing that really struck me is that many of those people died lonely deaths. The reality of pastoral agriculture in New Zealand is that many people work alone, and a lot of us actually like that. You know, that doesn't mean we should be out of contact, and being in communication is important for a whole raft of reasons. And for those of you out there that really do like rules, actually there is a rule about this one. In section 21 of the regulations, it says a business must provide a system of work that includes effective communication with the worker in remote or isolated work. So that's generally my start point. Like I said, I'm really happy to be here and answer as many questions as I can. Right. There will be some things I won't know the technical details for, and we can have a discussion about how we can clear up those questions later on.
What we always do afterwards too is we follow up with an email to everybody that registered with links, extra information stuff if we can't answer it on the night. But
cool.
As you've seen, we've had a number of questions, and a lot of them do verge on asking for prescriptions and decisions, because that's sort of the way people tend to think. But start with the bigger picture stuff. You've sort of talked about what you've been doing over the last year and how it's to be in place and how we're to implement it and so on. But the why is always where people start with. Why? Why's the change? I mean, what's the... can you give us, from your point, the reasons why we're into this sort of stuff, the regulations changed, and what we expect to achieve?
Okay, so I think there's two really important things here. That, in fact, the new law, the new act and the new regulations don't actually require much more of farmers or any business than the old ones did. Mm. So, but what happened was, you'll be aware there was the Pike River disaster. As a result of that, there was a task force set up to look at health and safety in New Zealand workplaces. It's a report written by Rod Jager. It's a report worth reading, even if you only read the first sort of summary of it by Rod. Basically, what it says is New Zealand's really bad about this. Mm-hmm. You know, in some sectors, you know, we're two or three times worse than the rest of the world in terms of our injury rate. And guys, agriculture is one of those sectors. So the government then, the report then goes on to say, well, what are some of the things we can do as a government, as a country, to improve our health and safety performance in workplaces? Mm-hmm. And one of the things was, look, there's a whole lot of bits in the current legislation that are a bit confusing. And a lot of people actually don't know what's in the legislation. They're business people, but they haven't really bothered to pick it up. Mm-hmm. So let's try and alter that. And one of the things is, let's get rid of as much of the poor language and the bureaucratic nonsense that's in the current act, and put it in plainer language that applies to just about every business. And let's build in there the fundamentals of really good health and safety practice, that floor I talked about. Mm-hmm. So let's put that in there. And that's really where the new act comes from. In terms of the Safer Farms program, which we've been running that since 2014. And so what happened is we'd set in place the groundwork, and then the new act came along at just the right time for our program to sort of lift awareness just that little bit extra. And some of the lifting of awareness was all the debate that went on about it beforehand. Hmm. You know, so that's just some of the stuff we do, and that's why the act is there.
Yeah. Judging by some of the comments and the interest in this call, awareness is pretty high. It's moving through confidence and security and satisfaction and the good outcomes that we're still working on. So you talked about that report, which we might be able to get a link to for people, and how we compare to the rest of the world. Do you have any sort of more specific stats around how New Zealand agriculture compares with, we're not directly comparable systems, but how do we compare with farming in other countries?
Yeah, so one of the stats that I came across is that we were around four or five times worse than the UK and three times worse than the Australians. but there have been some questions around the rates and the types of comparisons that were made. So, I mean, what we can basically say is our rate per thousand is higher than the rates per thousand in other agricultural first world countries, if you like, or Western countries.
And so that's the why. Successful outcome here will be lowering that, improving those rates.
Absolutely.
So you have, and it's a, you know, it's pretty, might sound a bit cold to have some just statistics around when we're talking about people's lives and injuries and so on, but have you got targets for where you want it to get to and by when?
The government wants by 2020 a 25% reduction in serious harms and fatalities.
And 1 year, have you seen any influence?
Well, actually, I think we really have to be quite careful about what we're seeing. So given the scope of change that's needed, and we can talk about cultural change and all those sort of things, it's unlikely the stats will change quickly. So we've been at Safer Farms for 2 years now. And what we know is that the number of injuries and fatalities fluctuate from year to year. So you have to have several years worth before you can start to say there's a trend. However, the latest statistics seem to indicate that we're heading in the right direction. Hey, but it could be, you know, there's a big drop off 1 year, and then because everyone becomes a little bit complacent, it goes back up again. So the thing is don't concentrate on the stats so much. That's our measure. What should everyone should be concentrating on their farms is, hey, let's just make sure that every night we come home safely.
Two data points don't make a trend.
And I guess that's the thing. Let's be fair. No one sets out to injure themselves every day. But the thing is that those injuries do happen. 23,000 a year agricultural ACC claims, and 2,000 of over 2,000 of those are serious enough for people to be more than 7 days off work. Which has a cost to the business as well. And then another 20 of those are fatalities every year.
So that's some of the why, and we'll get into some of the what, but I want to talk a wee bit about the how. And you talked about the legislation being very prescriptive, or not prescriptive, but principles-based effectively. Yeah. And to be fair, that's probably one of the challenges I've probably heard the most talking with farmers, and I don't work directly with farmers as some of my colleagues at the moment. On a number of things, you know, particularly little things, is it too general principles rather than not prescriptive enough? You know, some of the questions which we're going to get into shortly are around quite small issues that you think it would be relatively easy to be a decision, yay or nay, do this or don't do that on. Do you think that is part of what is causing people angst, that they can't find in black and white the answer to a question?
I think what causes angst more is people are just not quite sure what they're meant to do. And that's what we're trying to, you know, that's the question and the comment that we get most when we meet people. You know, I'd really just want to know what I'm meant to do. And I think that's why the beef and lamb workshops have been so phenomenally successful, because they take what you're required to do by the law, and they turn it into a set of quite easy things to do. But here's the rub, I think. If we keep on giving people rules and things they have to do, it's not necessarily changing the thinking. And the thinking is, it's not so much about all the paperwork. The thinking is about, I'm doing something, what's the risk? What am I, you know, taking that 2 or 3 seconds or 2 or 3 minutes if it's a new task to think about, hey, what exactly am I going to do here? How could that hurt me? You know, and getting that ingrained so that every time you're having the conversation with the other person, or you're thinking about the task and saying, actually, I'm not going to take the quad up that hill today because it rained last night and it's a bit slippery.
So let's say, get onto some of the questions that have come. Worst case scenario, there is an incident, or it's one of your inspectors is just talking to a farmer. What is the sort of evidence they're going to require to be confident that a farmer is installing those principles, all those things you've just talked about? And the question we had specifically is having a written plan actually required? or what are you, what evidence do you need?
So I think the written thing is really interesting. At the moment, there is one written requirement, and that is you've got to keep a list of notifiable incidents that happened on your farm.
Mm-hmm.
So, and notifiable incidents are the serious harm type stuff, or the spillage of chemicals, or all those things that could harm people. And there's a calculator on the WorkSafe website that actually helps you work all those things out, whether it's you have to notify it or not. So that's the only thing you really have to do, to write down. So it then comes down to what suits your farm. Now, if you're a one-person farm, and you're the owner-operator, and you make all the decisions, then what you need in place is something that suits you. And your obligation, really, is to be able to show that you're managing your work risks. So do you need a maintenance register with all your vehicles and all those sort of things? Well, no, you've probably got a box of receipts somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if the inspector turns up and says, you know, I want you to show me that you keep your vehicles in good gear, in good order, or your equipment in good order, well, you'll wander out and you'll have a look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, you might say, look, I've got a whole bunch of receipts here if you really want to see them. And sometimes they will, and sometimes they won't. It'll depend on the condition and what they see. And you know, sometimes you can have well-maintained vehicles, but then you look at something else, and there might be a piece of equipment sitting there without a PTO shaft cover.
Mm.
And so they'll ask a question around that. They'll ask about your fuel storage. You know, they'll, if you've got people who work for you, they'll have a talk to them. And they'll ask them questions about, so what sort of discussions do you have before you go out to have a task? You know, so you know, you can get a folder full of stuff from a consultant, or you can make it up yourself, and that could cover everything you ever need to know about health and safety. But it's useless if it just sits on a shelf and you don't do anything about it. The reality is once you've analysed the risk, you then need to keep on managing those risks every time. And that's the secret.
And you need evidence of that, if the worst case scenario.
Yeah.
But
that evidence, you need to be able to show it.
So evidence could be receipts, or it could be your staff's word of their word.
Or it could be, you know, people say, oh, do we have to sign people on and off the farm? Mm. No, you don't. There's nowhere in the law that says you have to have signs at the gate and you signs all over. What you have to be able to show is that you're communicating with people. So if the shearers come on, you know, you might have a discussion with a ganger or someone like that, and you have a talk about what equipment you've got and all those sort of things. Quite often the shearing gangs now will look through your shed beforehand. And they'll point out things that they think need fixing before they'll come and work there. You know, so you'll have those discussions. If you've had those discussions, that's great. If you really want a note of it, make a note in your diary. On so-and-so, I saw so-and-so from the gang. We walked through the shed. I promised that I'd bring a portaloo in because they've got women working for them, and the long drop's disgusting. So, yeah, it's those sort of things. Mm.
Now, you talked before about the role, you're hoping to see, you know, the industry taking the lead, effectively, and WorkSafe's role there is to, A, there's regulation, but B, to advise and...
Yeah, engage and educate.
Yep.
Yeah.
So what's one of the really positive bits of feedback we've had from the Beef and Lamb New Zealand workshops is that it's been a chance to meet WorkSafe staff in a neutral setting. Not on farm, that there's no risk they're going to spot something behind a shed or whatever that's the problem. It's off farm, chance to talk to them one-on-one, and we've heard some pretty good feedback from WorkSafe staff too, a chance to meet people in a neutral and hopefully fairly relaxed setting. But what is the role of inspectors? What are they just there to turn up when there's an accident, or?
No, so we have two different sets of people, and sometimes they're the same person, but there's an investigation role, which is when they come on and they try and establish the cause of an incident that's caused a serious harm or fatality. And there's the inspector role who comes on to see if you have got the basics in place.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people see, oh, they're regulators, so it's like a policeman. But if a policeman sees you, generally, you know, they'll write a ticket straight away if you're doing something wrong, or if you're lucky, they might have a word with you. Our guys have a sort of protocol they go through. Uh-huh. If they see something that they think needs fixing, they'll have a discussion with you about it. And then at the end of all the discussions, they'll make a note about, well, these are the things we noted and that we agreed that you might fix up. So I'll send you an official note saying we'll get these things fixed up, and you'll show me some evidence of that, and that's fine. If they see something that's really dangerous that might cause immediate harm, so they're in a factory somewhere and they see a machine without appropriate guarding, what they can do is they can slap on it a prohibition notice, which basically says don't use this till you got it fixed. And they could do that on a farm as well, but they'll use their judgment about that. And that's one of the things. Every inspector uses their judgment depending on the circumstances and the environment that whatever's happening in. So, but our job, their job is to come on and just talk through with you what you're doing, and then not try and pick holes in it, but to point out where some things might need improving.
So farmers can go to a Beef and Lamb New Zealand workshop, obviously give them a good plug tonight. It's free of charge, or it's, you know, as free as
can be. And I recommend them too. I think they're great things.
Yeah. Paid for by your levy, so not technically free. They can listen to this podcast for, again, technically free, paid for by levies, but you can't beat one-on-one, face-to-face, and on your own specific example. So WorkSafe, more than happy for farmers to ring up and ask for an inspector to come out and have a chat, have a coffee, have a look, and just say, what do we need to do?
Absolutely, and the Beef and Lamb workshops have proved really cool at that, because they get to know the inspector, and then the inspector at the end will say, look, you know, here's my card. When you're ready for me to come out and have a look, give me a yell and I'll come out, or one of my colleagues will come out. And some of them, you know, they just ask a general question and come away with a list of attendees, except for those who don't want an inspector to come. So if you think you've got something in place and you'd like it tested, they'll come out and they'll do that. They'll treat every inspection the same. It will be an inspection. And so if they see something that's really wrong, they'll point it out. But, you know, they're not going to ping you with a huge great fine or something like that if they find something wrong. It'll just be a note saying, you know, you need to fix this.
No, look, that's another one. We have had that feed. We've done quite a bit of follow-up work on the workshops, keep referring back to those, and that was one of the things people said. They have had the inspectors come out afterwards, and it was a great way to break the ice for a start off, and then the visit went well because they knew some of what they were talking about too. So let's move on. Maybe there have been some fairly specific questions. We've spent a bit of time setting background and outcomes and principles and that sort of thing. The big one is almost around the whole country has been quad bikes. Around what you can and cannot do with them, the level of injury and harm we do have with them. Start with one that's of interest certainly to Beef and Lamb New Zealand, and you'll know where I'm going with this, and a lot of farmers as well, the carrying of passengers on quads, and the argument that sometimes it's safer to take somebody on your quad yourself because you know the place, all the hazards, etc., versus somebody who doesn't know the terrain, the location, and may not be that competent on a quad bike as well. Where are we at with that? Have we got I don't know whether you can say yay or nay, but I know Fed Farmers, Beef and Lamb, WorkSafe have been talking around that one. I don't know.
So we've been working with Federated Farmers, Beef and Lamb, and Dairy NZ on this. There will be an announcement in the next few weeks.
And you can't say any more.
And I
should have waited.
We can't really say anything more at this stage because we're still working through details.
So again, just the wrinkle on that one has been, I think, you know, our general recommendation, and I suspect, was to follow manufacturer's recommendations. If there's always a label on a four-wheeler and it says age, passenger, all that around that. Without WorkSafe being prescriptive, if a farmer follows the manufacturer's recommendations as a minimum, is that likely to be acceptable?
You know, manufacturer's instructions are certainly a minimum, but you've got to remember that sometimes you're using equipment outside its design parameters, and so then you have to think about the risks that bring and how to manage the risk. So don't forget, this legislation and the way risk is in the way injury is best prevented on farms is managing risk, so recognising and managing the risk. So manufacturers' guidelines should be part and parcel of your risk analysis process. So you use them to help you determine what the risks might be using that particular piece of equipment, whether it be a quad or a Toyota Ute or a skill saw or whatever. And then you'd also use the guidelines to help you work out how to manage that risk. And that's part and parcel of it. You got to say, there are a whole lot of risks around quads, for instance, that most people don't even know about. If you read the Honda manual, it's got a piece in there that if you're taking it on sealed road, get off and push. I don't know how many guys do that, but that just shows you, they've thought through what are the risks of taking a soft, lumpy tyre onto a hard, grippy surface, and what the potential danger to people could be. And they're saying, so just don't do it.
Only in the Honda book?
I haven't really looked at the other ones, to tell the truth. Yeah. The
Honda dealers will be ringing us tomorrow. The other one around quads is helmets. Is there a yes or no on helmet use on quads?
Yeah, well, our point of view is that, and the same with passengers, the guidance from the manufacturers is, these are machines where there is some inbuilt instability in terms of using them. And so there is a danger, you're falling from a height. If you're sitting on one of these, your head's probably a couple of meters off the ground. So if you're thrown from the vehicle or if you have to jump off it, there's always a danger that your head will come in contact with the ground. And everyone talks about crush and all those sort of things, but an awful lot of those injuries, that a crush might be one of the main injuries, but there are frequently head injuries that go with them as well. So what's the best reasonably practicable way to manage the risk of a head injury? And that's what the law says. If you can't eliminate it, you've got to manage it. So the best reasonably practicable way to mitigate for a head injury is to put a bloody helmet on. And that's what you should do. That's our point of view.
Yeah. So there is no regulation saying you must wear a helmet, but the principles, if you follow the principles, it makes it pretty clear. You'd be hard-pressed to meet the principles without wearing a helmet.
Absolutely. And in fact, in our quad guidance, there's in the longer version of the guidance, which is available on saferfarms.org.nz. See, I can put ads in my bit as well. What you will see is a piece towards the front that says, it's up to you to manage the risk. What we've done in consultation with farmers and with manufacturers is put together a set of guidelines, but that's what they are, guidelines. If you come up with a way that is as effective or more effective to managing that risk, go for it. Our guidelines are guidelines and recommendations.
Pushing your Honda on the tar seal would probably be one way that you minimise your risk of wearing, having to wear a helmet.
We're not going near tar seal at all. Use a ute for that.
Yeah. All right. Hey, one question that came in was around sometimes accidents happen and there are investigations. Why aren't the outcomes or the results of those investigations made public as a chance for us to learn from them and see what went wrong and adopt that on our own properties?
Actually, we're working on this right now, and we're aware that we don't particularly do this very well. So what we generally do is, if there's a prosecution, we try to make the lessons learned from the prosecution available. Or if there's a coroner's hearing, then we try to make the lessons learned from that available as well. But that's often a long time after the actual event. Our issues, and any of you out there that have been involved with investigations will know that some of these things take a long time, and that's frequently because we have to go and seek more expert opinion, or we have to wait for testing on something. we need to sort of make sure that we get our conclusions as right as is possible. And the other thing is, in pastoral agriculture, is a lot of these incidents happen when people are working alone, so no one actually quite knows what happened. So we're really, what we're trying to do is sort of come up with a two-tier thing. So we'll say an incident happened, and these are the sort of things that we have seen in the past that help contribute to these incidents. So these are things for people to be aware of.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about as much as we can say before it goes, you know, to full investigation. And it's just like the police say about a road crash. You know, there was a road crash and it appears, or in things like this, someone has crossed the centre line. They don't apportion any blame. They can't say exactly what happened, all those sort of things. But there is a sort of a statement like that. And we're trying to do that more and more. When we're asked for comment, we don't just go out and say, well, this is the sixth one this year.
Mm.
What we do is we might say, you know, there have been a number of these and recently, and they all happened on hill country when people were spraying or something like that. So we try to put some context around it. And then the next thing is we'll try and get some more regular lessons learned out. So last year I spent quite a lot of time looking at vehicle fatalities, and towards the end of last year we put out a series of articles about vehicle fatalities and the sort of things that we'd noticed from those, you know, the age groups who were involved, the fact that some vehicles had uneven tyre pressures, all those sort of things.
So there's actually been several questions that follow directly on from that around what you've learned, what you've seen, and I presume partly we've compared our stats with overseas, you'll be picking up information on mitigation, avoidance, remedying from overseas as well. So coming back to quads, there's things like rollover protection, reversing alarms, dual tyres was another one that came in, things like that some people are highly convinced can make quads safer, not just putting a helmet on the rider, but do things to the bike. Do you have information on those? Do you have a view on those? Have you got advice you can give farmers on, do those work? Do those help? Do they make it worse?
So I think the reversing beeper one is quite interesting. Because my understanding is that when quads first came out in New Zealand, they had reversing beepers, and it was farmers who were saying, oh, we don't want those things. So they were taken off.
Uh-huh.
That's my understanding. I don't know whether that's apocryphal or not, but that's my understanding. Uh-huh. And certainly, you know, I can't see any reason why people wouldn't put them on. You know, everyone that I know that has them on, you know, some people say, oh, they scare the stock. But as we all know, stock get used to things like that pretty quickly if you're using them around them regularly. Rollover protection is a more complex issue because there are a whole lot of people who are convinced that they are the right way to go. And then there are the manufacturers who have conducted some research, and that research basically showed them that the particular rollover protection that they were testing, the probability of a person being damaged by the rollover protection and the fact that it removed an escape route from the vehicle, that sort of said to the manufacturer as well, perhaps we shouldn't recommend these things for our vehicles. And so that's their position. Their position is based on their research. They don't like these things on their vehicles because one of the safety features of a quad is the fact it's got a relatively clear surface and you can be thrown off or throw yourself off basically in any direction.
Mm-hmm.
The minute you put something between you and being thrown off, and that would include a spray tank on the back, I would imagine, or on the front, suddenly you're reducing those options for escape from the vehicle. What we've done is we've seen there is some limited research, proper research, you know, academically verified research, that says in some situations rollover protection will stop a person from being killed or by crush asphyxiation, and in some circumstances rollover protection will assist the bike in rolling away from the person that's on the ground or being thrown clear of it. So there are these two sort of almost competing sets of research, but they're not actually contradictory, because the pro research, if you like, says, hey, you know, we're not saying these things don't injure you, though we're saying that they stop you from being killed. So what we decided was we really needed some proper research, and there's been a number of coroners hearings in Australia and one in New Zealand as well, where the manufacturers have maintained their line, and at the end of it the coroner has said someone needs to sort this out, go and do it. So Safe Work New South Wales has commissioned the University of New South Wales to look into this, and some of you who are listening might have been part of the research that they did. We put out a thing asking people to fill in the research. So the results of that should be out soon. That will give us a much clearer steer on where our position should be. What we want is what's safest for everyone in the long term. And you know, that's where we are with rollover protection. It's not a, you know, I think everyone would love to be able to say these things will save lives and injury, let's get on with it. But at the moment, there's a whole lot of anecdotal evidence, but there isn't the sort of solid research-based evidence that we need in order to be able to make that sort of decision.
Okay. One of the, just working through, we've covered a fair bit tonight, so one of the last questions I want to get onto, Al, is actually a bit of a wrinkle on it. We've talked about contractors coming on to farms, but one of the things farmers do as a community is they have a lot of volunteer time on other people's farms. On, I know for Beef and Lamb New Zealand, we have monitor farm programs, for example, which rely on a community group coming onto other farms as volunteers. They're not there to work or do a job. A specific couple of cases, people help run school farms, for example. They're volunteers on that farm. What's the situation there with their responsibilities, or the responsibilities of the landowner, the PCBU? Person conducting a business or undertaking to people that are coming on as volunteers for that sort of a school farm, a field day, those sort of things.
So there's some quite good guidance about things like you know, visitors onto your farm and running school events and things like that on our Safer Farms website. The bottom line here is that the workplace on a farm is defined as, you know, the yards and the buildings and the immediate area around it, and any place where work is taking place. So as a farmer, if you've got someone on your farm and there isn't work taking place there, it's not a workplace. But if there's something you have caused to take place there, or that you think might endanger or harm the people that are there, then you have an obligation to tell them. And usually if there's one person in charge of a group, your obligation is to communicate with that one person, and it's their obligation to communicate with the whole group. And you know, that could be as simple as if you've got a track going through your farm, having a sign at the beginning saying, look, you know, especially say you're a high country station or something like that, there are animals running around here without fences, you know, be careful if you see a beast, you know, walk around it, don't get too close. If the animal seems agitated, keep well away. You guys know as well as I do the sort of things you'd tell people in those circumstances, and that might be all you need to do. If you've got volunteers coming onto your farm and they're doing work, they are a worker.
Even if they're not paid.
Even if they're not paid.
No contract, no formal arrangement coming on to them.
They're still workers. So you've got, and if you are the person that has caused that work to be done, you have a responsibility to look after their health and safety. If they're coming onto your farm to do something different and you're not causing that work to be done, say someone coming to look at an irrigation canal or something like that, your obligation is to just let them know of any impact your work will have on them. And their obligation, say if it's a regional council, their obligation to let you know of any impact their work might have on you. So they're the thing. So One of the things that I saw again and again is people who said, oh, well, every time so-and-so comes onto our farm, we have to give them a full farm briefing. No, you don't. You just have to talk about the risks for that day that they are going to face on your farm, where they're going.
Uh-huh.
You don't have to tell them about a silage pit that's 2 kilometres in the other direction. You don't have to tell them about an effluent pond they're going nowhere near.
Uh-huh.
Those sort of things. You just need to tell them they're going down by the river, you sprayed the blackberry down there, it's got a withholding period on the spray, so you let them know that so that they don't eat the blackberries.
Final question then, and this one comes up because of farmers being time poor, especially sole operators run their business and they don't always interact directly or can't always interact directly with somebody coming onto their property, whether it's a contractor, a volunteer, a visitor, a tramper walking through, somebody going duck shooting. How much of the sort of the briefing, the updates can you do, remotely, via email, text, social media, is all the...
It's all communication.
Yep.
So, when I worked on farms, if there was something coming the next day, there'd be a phone call the night before or a couple of nights before. And that's when everything got sorted out. Oh yeah, okay, well, I'll be in town at the show, so just go down the back and do your thing. Nothing wrong with that.
In principle, you can do it.
Yeah, and our recommendation is if you're not quite sure about whether the person's got the message fully, is to write down what you told them and make sure, and an email is a great way to just reinforce those things. One of the biggest things that I came across was the fertilizer guys saying that their need for communication with farmers was far greater than a lot of farmers realized. They actually needed to be able to ask questions, the night before or the morning of, and to say, what is the situation on that paddock? I've been there before. Are there any soft spots that have developed? Are there any tomos that have developed? How long since stock have been on there? Because quite frankly, it just needs a cow pad and the wheel can start slipping. So, yeah. So that's the main thing. I come back to that thing, identify the risk, work out what you're going to do about it, and then make sure you communicate. And that communication, more than anything else, is the thing that will stop a whole lot of the incidents happening.
So you're trying to use sort of digital media, social media, to answer a lot of questions. So your website is, you can give another plug,
saferfarms.org.nz.
Okay, so there's information on there, and or it's a way to contact local inspectors and so on directly.
Yep.
All right. Look, I'm just looking at the time and looking at what we've covered tonight. There's been a fair bit, so I think we're going to wrap it up there. And Al, any last things you really want to hit before we tidy it up?
No, I think, we've said it all. It's not as hard as people think it is. Those guys that have been to the beef and lamb workshops will know that. And the biggest piece of feedback we get, I feel a lot more reassured now. I think I know. The other thing is, a lot of people are doing this already. They haven't got it written down, but they're doing it. And so the important thing is, do I need to write it down in order to communicate it to people, whether it be my staff or visitors or the inspector if they turn up?
Yep.
And that's a question you ask yourself about writing stuff down. But the reality is, identify the risks, work out what you're going to do about them, and then just communicate that to everyone who's involved.
All right, thanks, Al. We'll wrap it up there. Look, it's my great hope, and hopefully it won't be me, but in 30 years' time, somebody will be doing a beef and lamb or whatever, a podcast, and they'll use health and safety legislation and changes as their example of something that seemed a big deal at the time, but pretty quickly became business as usual and just part of the way we operate. So look, thanks to all of you out there, the listeners who've dialed in and sent your questions or sat through this and listened. We will follow up. I've made a number of notes as we've gone through. We will follow up with an email to those of you that registered with various links and how to get hold of bits of information. And the recording should be up very soon on our podcast channel, so you can listen again or share with friends and colleagues. Don't forget, if I haven't reminded you enough during the workshop, Beef and Lamb New Zealand runs levy-funded workshops, the Farm Safety Management System workshops. They're on all over the country. Check your website, call the 0800 number or your local extension manager. So finally, a very large thank you to Al McCone from WorkZone.
Thank you for having me.
No problem. So as we said at the start, culture change like this isn't necessarily comfortable, but I think hope tonight we've explained a big part of why it has to happen, how it will happen, and how we can actually benefit from it, not just see it as a cost to our business. So thanks, Al. Thank you all. Next conference call will actually be in just a couple of weeks. I hope to have had it confirmed today, but I'm not far off it, and we'll let you know who it is and the topic as soon as we get that sorted. So until then, thank you all and good night.